Hi, this is Dr. Kim DeRamo from drkimd.com and the American Institute of Mind-Body Medicine, and I am speaking today with my friend Dr. Peter Osborne. He is a specialist, board-certified in chiropractic medicine. He is a diplomat at the American Clinical Board of Nutrition. He's really a specialist in nutrition, helping reverse multiple types of chronic illness. He has a practice in Sugar Land, Texas, called Origins Healthcare. And he's recently published a number one best-selling book, No Grain, No Pain. He's also the author of Glutenology. It's a series of digital videos and ebooks to help educate the world about gluten. And I'm super excited to be interviewing him today because he's going to share with us some ways you may not even realize that gluten can be interrupting your health, causing weight gain, depression, chronic illness, all kinds of things. And so we'll be talking today to reverse the grain brain. Welcome, Dr. Peter.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Dr. Kim. It's great to be here.
Well, I want to first ask you a few things about, because I know you've had just amazing results with people with all kinds of chronic illness and then finding out that it's actually gluten causing this disease and hormone imbalance. And how do people end up knowing that they're having a gluten intolerance?
Well, it's partly, I'm going to answer that question in two parts. One is that it's partly gluten. Gluten, one of the premises of why I wrote the book, No Grain, No Pain, was because gluten is like this evil-doing bad guy that everybody picks on all the time, relentlessly. And gluten can be very detrimental for someone, but there's so much more in grain that's detrimental than just gluten alone. I mean, we've got mycotoxins, we've got heavy metals in grains, we've got other proteins that shut down the pancreas's ability to secrete digestive enzymes. So there are a number of components to grain that can contribute to disease, inflammation, and other problems. But the answer that the other question, which is, you know, how does somebody know whether or not gluten or grain in and of itself is the issue in the first place? The best way to discern this is through genetic testing. I've embarked upon every possible test you could imagine, everything you could possibly do through antibody testing, through cytokine testing, through inflammatory mediator testing, and nothing is as accurate as DNA. And the reason why, if a person has genes that are what we would call a gluten-sensitive or grain-sensitive pattern on their genes. There's a specialized gene, actually, two of them called HLA-DQ genes. And if a person has this pattern where when they're exposed to grain, their body looks at the grain as an enemy, not as a friend, and creates an inflammatory response against it, that's not a disease, right? That's a normal reaction against something that the body is not designed to be able to tolerate without creating inflammation to get rid of it. So if we measure these genes, we can ascertain whether or not a person has these grain or gluten-sensitive gene markers. If they have them, the more grain exposure they get over a lifetime, the more inflammation they create, over time, the more that bioaccumulates and builds into a host of different types of diseases.
And then when someone is going to, so let's say they have this, it's positive that they have this intolerance, does that mean they have to completely give up all grains completely, or is there like a continuum where, you know, if they have a little bit less, they'll do a little bit better? Does that work?
Well, I'm going to use an analogy. It's the diabetes analogy. If a person with diabetes gives up sugar and starts to exercise, do they have to, should they really give up sugar forever and should they really continue to exercise forever?
And,
rhetorically speaking, yeah, absolutely, right? Because it's the thing that got them into a disease state in the first place was their prior behaviors. And so it goes that way with grain. If a person's genetically sensitive, then their behavior of consuming that food got them in that boat in the first place. And so they need to get it out. And if they bring it back in, yeah, they're going to be susceptible to the same types of damage and the same types of problems. That's why I'm a big, big fan of not guessing, because a lot of people will guess the gluten-free diet. They'll say, oh, I feel better when I don't eat it, and so they won't eat it. But they may be restricting their diet to too great of a degree. They may be feeling better not because they're gluten-sensitive, but because they cut out wheat and the glyphosate and the atrazine that was loaded in the processed weeds that they were eating, they were allergic to, or they were having an immune response to, and it had nothing to do with gluten at all. Maybe they felt better because aflatoxin was present in the corn cereal that they were eating, and so they thought, okay, I'm giving up this grain and I feel better, but it's not really the grain. Maybe it's really the aflatoxin. So my job in writing this whole thing was to differentiate the differences between the problematic substances that can be found in all grains versus gluten, and whether or not the person should avoid them all forever, or whether or not a person should avoid some and not others, etc.
Okay, so they get more conclusive awareness. I know for me, a lot of my patients and clients have said, well, you know, I kind of just cut back on it, and they think that's doing the job. And the truth is, like, it is so toxic for people who are sensitive that you really, you'll feel so much better, like dramatically, markedly better if you kind of omit all of that stuff you're sensitive to, as opposed to like, oh, let me just eat a little bit less of it. I'll just have a half a bowl of pasta instead of a whole. Or they think they're avoiding it, but they haven't really taken the time to eradicate it completely from their diet. And I've seen that make a huge difference when people are sort of that diligent about it. So what is the connection between weight gain? And then I want you to talk a little bit about what the inflammation is, because a lot of people don't really get clear in, like, what does inflammation mean and how does that affect my health and my how I absorb food and my brain works and all of that. So will you talk a little bit about inflammation and weight gain?
So, I mean, with grain, the consumption of grain, if somebody is genetically gluten sensitive and they're consuming large quantities of grain, then their normal process is to make inflammation to combat what they're eating. In essence, their body is at war with their food, and the byproduct of that war is collateral damage of inflammation. Now, a lot of people think inflammation is this bad, evil thing, and inflammation is nothing more than a housekeeper, kind of a conscious housekeeper. We have skin, and as it gets old, we use inflammation to break down old skin and build new skin. The same thing happens in our bones. The same thing happens in our muscles, in our liver, in all the tissues of our body. We use inflammation as a housekeeping tool so that we can repair tissue. It's when inflammation grows out of control, and so in the case of grain inflammation, we have people who shouldn't be eating grain, creating vast quantities of inflammation. So almost think of it as, you know, you have a maid in your house, and every time you set something down on the counter, it disappears because she's so effective at coming through. And so you never can find anything because it's always being put away or being put up somewhere else. And so it would be infinitely frustrating to live in that kind of environment. And so this is what happens in the body. It's hyperinflamed. There's too much of it going on. And so the process of healing, you know, part of the process of healing is inflammation. But if we never get past the stage, the initial stages of inflammation, healing actually never occurs. And so we just stay in this state of chronic inflammation. And again, inflammation being a breakdown process or a catabolic process where we're breaking down so that we can build new. And if we are always breaking down, we can never build new. So all the resources go into breaking down. Now, that's kind of part one to that question. Part two
is a lot of your energy going into that too, like, which makes you kind of depleted in other areas because there's so much inflammation.
Right. So if for example, if you know, some people with grain sensitivity, gluten sensitivity, some people it affects and impacts their liver. So that, you know, there's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or autoimmune hepatitis, which has been linked to gluten sensitivity. And so these people, they're eating this food that's creating this damage to their liver, and now the functions of the liver, the detoxification, the hormone regulation, the thyroid hormone conversion, all those things aren't happening as efficiently. So now they have this slew of other symptoms that can start to set in. And so now they've been told they have a thyroid disease because they're a poor converter. They're not converting T4 to T3. Part of it is because their liver's damaged by gluten. And now their liver can't maintain and continue to do its functions. And so we end up blaming thyroid disease per se as opposed to blaming the origin of where the thyroid disease came from.
You know, I've seen a lot of people where their kids, young kids, are diagnosed, you know, they're overweight and they don't know why they're so overweight. And then years later, they're diagnosed with fatty liver. And there are not a lot of doctors who are looking at the diet and looking at this grain sensitivity. And that's exactly what you're talking about, because they're like, I have no idea what could have possibly caused this. And this is a very evident understanding of how that happens.
Well, and it's a matter of asking the right questions. I mean, we can give a diagnosis all day long. Doctors love to call diseases names and then you know, offer up a solution of a medication or a surgery, and in some cases a vitamin pill or a supplement or some type of therapy or whatever the case might be. But the reality is, if we don't understand the underlying origin of where the problem is coming from in the first place, food is a major cause of disease. We know that. We've known that for years. Gluten is just in the category of food. Grain is in the category of food. And for many people, that grain inflammation leads to just a chronic deterioration of the body. And it steals resources and takes those resources that would be given to other tissues to heal and properly function. And now those resources are being used to try to go about the process of healing this inflamed area. And that, of course, leads – or go ahead. I'm sorry. You were going
to
chime in.
No, it's important to look at that, because so many people, when we have a diagnosis, well, I have autoimmune illness, I have thyroid disease, I have, you know, arthritis and or migraines, and then they kind of think that means that's my problem, where that's really just the result of an underlying problem. And this is a huge underlying problem for so many people, where all that inflammation is like stealing so much energy over there and causing so much damage that they can't heal and balance other areas. And then they have disease that's manifested over there, and all the doctors are looking over there, and all the specialists are looking over there. And that system, where the underlying issue is in the GI system and in the diet.
Right, and that's where the confusion is, because, I mean, how many people actually go to the doctor with a thyroid condition or diagnose the liver condition or skin condition and get talked to about their diet? As a matter of fact, it's the opposite. You know, your diet has nothing to do with your condition is what most of the people that I see in my clinic in Sugarland, that's what I hear. You know, they tell me. They're on their seventh or eighth doctor, being me, and they've all basically told me that their prior doctors have said, nutrition doesn't play a role in this disease or that disease or this disease, when in fact it plays a huge role, and it's not always just gluten, but you know, again, gluten is popular, and so many people are gravitating toward that diet.
Can I ask you another thing too? With now that I know that one of the reasons so many people are now gluten intolerant is because of the awareness, but what about the processing of the food and the processing of the wheat? Like, how has that impacted this sensitivity and this toxic effect from our food?
Oh, the processing has definitely led to it. But I think at the end of the day, and we'll know maybe in another decade to 20 years, you know, there's gluten sensitivity, which we all hear about. Gluten sensitivity, meaning it's specifically this family of proteins within grains called glutens that create these immune reactions that cause these people to react and have inflammation. But then there's also these other fundamental tenets about grain that can create inflammation that have nothing to do with gluten. One family of proteins in particular found in wheat called ATI, amylase trypsin inhibitors, shut the pancreas down, prevent the pancreas from digesting food. And so now the gut has this food that's non-digested, and that non-digested food rots in the gut and breaks, creates a barrier breach in the gut. And now we've got this stage of leaky gut that's occurring. And so that in and of itself has nothing to do with gluten. It's a completely separate type of protein. There's another protein in grain called GLO3A proteins that have been identified. They activate something called a toll-like receptor. And I'm not going to get into the huge deep science, because most people won't know what that means or what that is. But I think it's important to understand that there's so many different mechanisms that we're discovering and that we continue to discover about grain, or about what's in grain, or about how grain is processed, whether it be with pesticides, whether it be stored in big containers that are rife with mold and mycotoxin, whether it be that they're grown in fields that are stripped of nutrient density, so the plant itself is more prone to sucking up cadmium and arsenic because the soil's depleted of other minerals. So, I mean, there's all these different parameters that can be a part of why grain in and of itself is bad for someone beyond gluten. I really want people to understand that the conversation really needs to evolve from gluten and really talk about grain as a quality food. So, you know, the awareness is there, and I think more people are avoiding gluten per se, but what they're actually doing is they're avoiding more grains. And so there are just so many more things than gluten that can contribute to and create damage.
and there's obviously like so much that people could learn and need to sort of inform themselves with all of this. And I know you have a like an online webinar to educate people and give them solutions to directly create changes easily. So I want people to know that I'm also going to share that link. So, Dr. Peter, we will send them to your webinar so they can kind of go forward, because we're going to have like a relatively short conversation on this really big topic. But I want to be sure people have that resource to go further with the training and with you. And that's, you know, it's a free webinar training. So for people who want to go forward, that is going to be on this page, and you can click on that link to go forward there. So what are some natural things that people can do to reduce inflammation, to help their body get healthier, either reducing pain or illness? What are some things that people can do right now?
Well, there are seven fundamental tenets that I like to really instruct people on. And the first one is eating the right food. Now, we can do a person can have definitive testing done that identifies what they should and shouldn't eat to a large extent, which is what I obviously am going to recommend a person who's very sick do. But the
and
person
I'm sure
who's
in your
not
webinar,
very sick,
you kind of can go more into that, where they can learn more about how to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. But the person who's not sick, I give three rules of nutrition. So these I call these the three cardinal rules, right? Rule number one, you cannot get healthy or achieve health or maintain health eating food that isn't healthy. I mean, and I know it's kind of a duh, no kidding, right? But so many people will gravitate toward a diet soda, and they'll think, oh, it's a diet, therefore it's not caloric, therefore it must be not unhealthy, right? And so they have these ways of justifying what is and what isn't healthy. But what I encourage people to do is look at the food, right? If it's full of chemicals, it's not really food. We're calling it food under the guise that it's food, but what it really is it's chemicals. So evaluate what you eat. First step is becoming aware of what is and what is not healthy. The second rule, don't eat what you're allergic or intolerant to. And outside of getting tested, you know, if you acutely react to a food, if every time you eat a food your toes swell, or every time you eat a food your lips swell, or you break out in hives, don't pay the price of eating that food. Stop eating that food. And then the third rule, very simply put, is if you feel bad when you eat it, if you feel symptomatic when you eat that food, then stop eating that food. Again, a lot of this is just self-awareness, right? First, identifying with what is food, and second of all, being self-aware of how food actually has a relationship with your body, how it makes you feel in a negative way or in a potentially negative way. So that's kind of one thing I would say walk away with. There are a couple of other things, though. One is sunshine. Sunshine is, a lot of people don't realize, sunshine's a nutrient. And so many people have been told to go indoors because of the fear of skin cancer that they've become more vitamin D deficient in the last 20 years than we've probably seen in the last 100 years, more vitamin D deficiency. It's an epidemic.
And then that affects your gut, right? Because you get, like, not as good sort of a seal in the lining of your gut if you don't have enough vitamin D, so then that can affect all of the same things.
Well, absolutely, and it affects your insulin, so therefore it affects how you process sugar, and so you will gain weight with vitamin D deficiency. You'll be diabetic prone. Vitamin D is a pro-hormone. It helps you absorb calcium and iron in your GI tract. Vitamin D is a natural anti-inflammatory. It helps the immune system regulate its activity so that it's not too strong or too weak. And there are 19 causal, I say causal, not associated relationships. In other words, vitamin D deficiency can cause 19 types of cancer that we know of. And so it's an important nutrient. Go outside. And don't go out long enough to burn, but go out long enough to get sunshine without sunscreen. And think of it as a nutrient. Think of it and put it into your day. Put it in as a part of your day. So sunshine.
Wow.
Water and air
quality. I didn't realize that either, that vitamin D deficiency can cause cancer. I mean, I know it contributes, but that is a really big thing to note.
Yeah, it's causal. I mean, yeah, totally causal. So, I mean, there's, you know, in science we have associations in epidemiological studies, but then sometimes we have these smoking guns where X plus Y equals Z, right? And that's kind of where vitamin D falls with a number of different kinds of cancers. So rule number three is exercise, and exercise is different for different people. Do something you love, do something that you can have fun at doing, because that's the way you'll stay consistent, but do something consistently on a regular basis. Rule number four is sleep, getting enough sleep. And I say, you know, the time frame to be asleep is 10 p.m. and 10 p.m. through 2 a.m. Now, don't wake up at 2 and start your day, and don't go to bed at 10. Be asleep by 10. And obviously, try to sleep longer than 2 a.m., but you really want to try to have a window where you're at least asleep for that time frame, because that's when your body resets its hormones. That's when your body does most of its healing. And then some of the other common sense tips, learn to laugh. A lot of people take themselves, take life, take everything too seriously, and we've got to have fun. We only have one life, so learn to take yourself less seriously. Learn to laugh. Learn to manage your stress in ways that are fun. And if you don't program fun into your life, fun won't find you. It'll have a lot harder time.
Well, and I know a lot of times people who have food intolerances, like, life gets unfun. Food gets unfun. Eating is unfun. It's like, oh, I got to make sure I do this thing. Whereas they could take it as, oh, that this is an opportunity for me to make myself super, super healthy because of this awareness. And you got to come up with some creative ways to make it fun when you have found out, instead of feeling like, oh, I have this problem and now I can't eat this thing, to actually realize that it allows you to be proactive in creating vibrant health. So that's a huge point there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, those are just some of the fundamental things that I would say walk away with, at least thinking about those things and thinking about doing some of those things or applying them on a consistent, regular basis, because without them, it can be very hard biochemically to restore good health.
Well, you're a wealth of knowledge and also amazing resources for pretty much every ailment, from like weight gain and disease. So many people have these chronic illnesses and no one has been able to help them get a solution. But also like anxiety, depression, I know all of these things are directly affected by making these changes and knowing how to avoid grains and which grains to avoid. And so I'm going to make sure everyone knows to go to your live webinar. We'll go much, much more in depth with this and give everyone the resources they need to make these changes easily. So I will put that link in there. Dr. Peter, tell us, what is this whole thing about the prescription pain medication trap?
Yeah, that's a big one. The prescription pain trap is look, people get into these positions where they feel like their pain is so great that they need to take medication to alleviate it. And what they don't understand is that, you know, maybe taking an aspirin today is not that big a deal, but when they become kind of consistent users, I'll say, whether they're on a prescription non-steroidal anti-inflammatory like naproxen or Celebrex, or whether on over-the-counters like ibuprofen or aspirin, what ends up happening is these drugs have actually been shown to strip away the mucosal barrier and the mucosal lining in both the stomach and the small intestine. So, you know, we talk about leaky gut as this very fundamental tenet to a lot of these pain syndromes, autoimmune pain syndromes. And so these people get on these drugs that strip away and prevent their gut from ever healing. So taking the medicine affords them a temporary pain relief, but it also creates a stage that never allows them to heal. Now, on top of that, and that's the trap, right? On top of that, we've got the nutritional deficit that occurs as a result of using these types of medications. For example, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, ibuprofen and aspirin, probably the two most common that most people have heard of, Motrin, Naproxen, these drugs block vitamin C and folate and iron. And so now you take this drug, you're on it for, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months. Now you're starting to deplete your iron store and your vitamin C and your folate. Well, the irony is that if you're taking the drug for pain, and let's just say it's muscle or joint pain, those three nutrients are required in order to form collagen and what's called a collagen crosslink, which is what makes collagen really elastic and strong and stretchy. And so our joints, our cartilage, and our muscles and tendons are made out of this substance. And if we're blocking the nutrients that help those substances be made with strength and integrity, then we're setting the stage for recurring injury. So again, we're blocking the pain, but we're creating a leaky gut, and in the secondary process, we're contributing to nutritional loss that leads to predisposition to further injury and further pain and further need for medications, and that's why it's a trap.
Yes, and there's so many people taking, even if it's like anti-anxiety, antidepressants, so many people are on those on a chronic basis. Every single day, sometimes years and decades. And then, of course, pain medications where people have been sort of entrained to use them on a chronic basis as opposed to really being used on a short-term basis the way they're intended. And even, you know, promoting these medications to be used on as a long-term solution. Medications should never be a long-term solution. And so what you're saying is they deplete our system of vital nutrients that keep us healthy, and that propagates the problem that we're trying to treat and get better from. So that's a huge trap, I think. I don't think a lot of people are aware of that at all, that can propagate this whole problem. So it's great for people to be aware of that. And I'm really excited about the solutions that you have, because I know we don't have that much time here, but we're giving people a lot of information and then, you know, some really great solutions with your cardinal rules. And I love your tips. And I know there's much, much more where people can go a whole lot deeper and get more support from you, so they're not, you know, so that this is easy. And again, I'm going to send them the link. Tell us a little bit about the webinar so people know what we'll be receiving there.
Yeah, so the webinar is all about battling chronic pain and autoimmune disease. You know, statistically speaking, autoimmune disease kills more people than cancer and heart disease. Just another tidbit of fact that very few people are aware of. And it's such a pervasive problem. Chronic pain is the number one reason people visit the doctor. And what we're trying to do in this webinar is offer viable solutions to eliminating chronic and autoimmune pain. And so part of the webinar is that we're asking people to submit their questions. So when they go to sign up, you know, send me your questions. I'm going to answer as many as I can. The whole premise of this webinar is to help you. But that's the point. It's to help people find viable solutions, real-world, workable solutions that make sense, that they can apply for the rest of their lives and not have to have this dependency upon medications that don't offer any viable solution long-term.
Amen. Amen. I love it. Thank you so much for coming and serving our group and our listeners. I'm really excited to get the word out about this for so many people who we really can sort of fall victim to the trap of the conventional medical system that disempowers us, disconnects us from our health, and sort of has us buying into all of these treatments that really don't work for the long term and can make things worse. So I'm excited to send people to your webinar. And why don't you tell us a little bit about the book? You have a number one best-selling book, No Grain, No Pain. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the book dives in. It's actually a 30-day program. What I wanted to do is I wanted to give people not just the knowledge and the information, because sometimes understanding what the problem is without understanding what the solution to the problem is just creates more stress and hectic patterns in our brains. So now we just become paralyzed and we can't take action. So the book really is a 30-day plan of action steps from start to finish and how a person can move from chronic pain and autoimmune pain into a place of feeling much, much better and a place of being empowered to continue those lifestyle changes that were made in the first 30 days on, you know, for an indefinite period of time. But then we also wrap the book up with, and my favorite chapter of the book is all about functional medicine. As you know, Dr. Kim, mm-hmm. functional medicine is where it's at. I mean, any doctor who really is passionate about actually solving why a patient is sick is practicing under the philosophy of functional medicine. And so I spend an entire chapter outlining that, spelling that out, teaching people how to find doctors where they can get access to this type of care, because I feel like it's just so important that even if you get through a 30-day program and you feel better, but you still need guidance or you still need help, that you're able to find that help, but able to find it from a doctor who offers personalized care as opposed to the one drug fits all disease model.
I agree. I could not agree more. And that's a great resource is to have a functional medicine doctor. We get additional training above and beyond what we learn in conventional medical school to look at these underlying root causes of disease. Awesome. Well, do you want to tell people where they can find you? We're going to put the link for the webinar here. Is there anything else you want to add?
Well, they can find us at I have a foundation at glutenfreesociety.org, which we just give great information, free information there about the gluten-free lifestyle and the grain-free lifestyle. And then if they're at all interested in getting a copy of the book, well, I'll just send you the link because I want to give your audience a bonus package. Anybody who buys, we've got a $200 coupon bonus package that we're going to give away to anybody who buys. So I want to make sure your audience has that. I don't want to send them directly to Amazon because if they do that, they won't get those coupons.
Okay, so we'll put a special link here so they can get those bonuses when they buy the book.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Dr. Peter, thank you so much for being here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This is Dr. Kim from drkimd.com, and we're sending you love for an awesome day and fabulous, vibrant health. See you soon.